All right, on this episode of Bouts Talkin' Bouts, excited to be talking to an individual set to headline BKFC 45, which goes down on June the 23rd, and a very intriguing bout as Luis Palomino knuckles up and toes the line against James Lilly. And great getting to talk to Luis, as always. How's your day going there, man?
Going great, man. I got one part of the day. I'm training done already. Recovering now, and some more training later on.
Yeah, and I'm curious about, you know, this fight here. I imagine, or maybe I'm wrong, but I guess I imagine you wouldn't be surprised that James Lilly would be the opponent, just being that he's, like, the number one ranked at this juncture. Like, what were your thoughts when the initial bout kind of came your way?
No, actually, it wasn't a surprise. I was getting ready for Austin Trout. You know, I've been asking for big names for quite a while now, and the big names are literally just ducking me right now. I'm just going, that's the word to use, they're ducking. They're using the excuse that they're debuting, or the Chad Mendes, the Eddie Alvarez, and they can't go to a champion right away, and they use that excuse to hide behind, and they want to face me. But Aston Trout wasn't one. I mean, being a two-time WBA world champion, I got to beat Cotto, fuck Canelo, like, fought some big names, you know, known worldwide. He did his debut against Diego Sanchez, he won, and I give him the opportunity to fight for the title right away. Everything was set. I was training for him for like 2 months straight, you know, him being a southpaw guy, completely different type of fighter, completely different type of cat. I even agreed to fight him in his own hometown, because no other big name would take, would accept fighting. So I even made it easy for him. I signed a contract that we're going to fight him in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Next thing you know, later on, something happened with the venue. They changed the venue to Miami, Florida, and he started getting funny, asking for more money, so that left him out of the loop, and surprisingly, they bring me Lilly. Now, I think Lilly deserves to have a shot, don't get me wrong. You know, he's 7-0, he's 4-0 organization, and he's a very good champion in England. So I think that, you know, he's more than happy to serve me a shot, but I'm in this position where I'm trying to get, like, the bigger names because, you know, to be very honest, who knows Lilly? Nobody knows Lilly. Nobody knows who he is. I'm not shutting down the job that he's done, but who has he faced? He hasn't faced anybody that, nowhere near, you know, the people that I faced, you know what I mean? And his name doesn't ring nowhere near the names that I want to fight, you know? So to answer the question, it was surprising for the simple fact that I was supposed to fight somebody else. Then I had to change my entire camp from a southpaw opponent to a right-handed person. And but deserving-wise, you know, he deserves to have a shot. 7-0 in this industry is very hard to accomplish.
Yeah, and that is curious because I did hear a chat you had with John Morgan where you didn't, like, specifically say who it was, but based on the description, I'm like, I think he's talking about Austin Trout here. And I mean, I'm curious about this too, because I would have imagined that fight would be at 165. Like, does it change the camp a fair bit, being that you're now readying to fight at 155 as compared to what you probably initially thought you were readying for?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I asked for the fight against Trout to be at 165 because he debuted at 165 and I hadn't had a chance to defend the title. But the contract was signed at 155, so that didn't make much of a change as far as the weight. It was just the fact that it's a completely different type of fighter, you know. Trout is an elite-level boxer, southpaw, and Lilly is a right-handed, you know, MMA slash boxer slash brawler fighter. You know, he can box, don't get me wrong. He has some good boxing in him, but I'm not the pedigree that Trout has, and, you know, right-handed stance is just, it's easier for me, if anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of interesting because that has been sort of a thread, like, trying to get these, like, bigger name fights. And like you said, very aware of Lilly and very much no disrespect to him, but it seems like you've had past accounts with guys like Chad Mendes or Eddie Alvarez and those fights not necessarily panning out. Like, what do you think that is? Is it just like they're not one to, you know, step in against, you know, the pound for pound number one? Like, what's going on there, man?
I mean, look, I'm a very respectful person. You know, I have the utmost respect for people like Chad Mendes, Eddie Alvarez, the Mike Perrys, you know, but you can't sugarcoat the shit, man. You know, there's and the others were looking for gold and wanted to see Japan. You know what I mean? Now you come to bare knuckle, you know, Chad Mendes, I called him off for an entire year and he was quieted out. Comes back to fight Eddie Alvarez. And then he retires. So he only did two fights and he's done, right? Eddie Alvarez is writing to me, you know, because I write to them respectfully, right? But, you know, Eddie Alvarez, because I was calling him out and he wrote to me, you know, directly. And he's like, you and I would never fight for money. Like, what you mean, man? So I understand that. I mean, the only way that I can put it is, if you're chasing for gold in the biggest organization in the world, the UFC, you've been a champion in Bellator, the second biggest organization in the world, right? You weren't looking for gold in Japan, but you don't want the gold that's being offered to you in bare knuckle fighting. I mean, you know, is it that you don't believe that you can win? Is it that you don't believe that you can retain a title like that? You know what I mean? So what are you telling me? So, From what I'm seeing, is this guy's like Chad Mendes, like the Eddie Alvarez, they're coming to an organization trying to collect a big payday, which, hey, man, you deserve it. You know, you've created a character for yourself that's known worldwide. You know, you've created this persona. You've been championing some cases, and it's great. You deserve that. It's kind of like where I'm at right now, where I feel like I deserve the big checks. And if this guy's coming over here, you know, collecting big checks, then put me against this guy. So let us earn that money. You know what I mean? I've called out, you know, everybody. Dale Lowes, you know, Mike Perry, Chad Mendes, Eddie Alvarez, and then the ones that have entered and are in the organization or were, do not want to face me. So what's the reason behind that? if ducking is not the word, then what is the reason? You tell me.
Yeah, I mean, and that has seemed to become part of the discourse more so in BKFC now. Like, it's almost kind of in my line of questioning with certain guys, too. Like, it's like, are you looking for, like, a title path? Are you looking to just kind of make the big bucks? And a lot of guys are pretty open, like, hey, I'm just kind of looking to make some big money here. So it is interesting. But just kind of in the, you know, legacy conversation, I mean, you're very much carving out that great path. I mean, last time out being, you know, that first fighter to successfully defend a BKFC world title 5 times. Like, it seems like you're embarking on a path where it's going to be, you know, very difficult for any next guy to kind of meet you in terms of consecutive title defenses. Like, how much pride does stuff like that kind of impart to you? I would think it would be important, at least.
Yeah, man, I mean, you know, I'm in this position right now. It's a funny position to be in, you know. Nobody in BKFC history or bare knuckle history that I've ever heard of in all the other organizations out there has defended their title more than 3 times. I've defended it 5 times, going on my 6th defense. There is no 2-weight division undefeated, you know, champion right now. I'm the one, you know? So it's like, you know, having all these accomplishments, like being a victim of your own success, in other words, you know what I mean? It's like, I have no problem if I have to, like, relinquish the belt to be able to get fights against guys that are stepping into the organization, hiding behind the fact that they can't go straight to a title shot. You know, and that's what's happening right now. You know what I mean? And these guys are, like, hiding behind the reason that they can't go to a straight title shot because they just got here. They want to get their feet wet. You know, that's what they all say. I want to get my feet wet and get a 2 New York fight, you know? And they get that and they still don't, like, you just look past like they don't see me. You know what I mean? You know, so it's a little frustrating, to be honest with you. You know? I think it's going to come down to, I feel bad at it, even for Nathan Shook, the matchmaker, and Dave Feldman, because I know that they try to put some of these fights together. And then they're making their job hard, because they want to come over here and collect a big check, but they don't want to work for it. They don't want to face a pound for pound. You know what I mean? So, I don't know, man. You know, we're gonna have to just take it one fight at a time. You know, we got meeting next, 2 weeks out. It's not gonna be taken lightly. You know what I mean? He's 7-0, something very hard to accomplish in this game. I mean, this game is brutal. You know, you don't necessarily have to be the best to win, man. Sometimes you can lose to somebody that's, you know, arguably not better than you because you got hit and you got cut with a cut big enough to get stopped. You know what I mean? Or you got paid and you got that now, it happens. You know, there's no gloves in this game. So at this time right now, man, just handle business on June 23rd. And
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And based on your breakdown, you've always struck me like this with previous opponents, but just like your, I guess, thorough understanding of what they bring to the table, just him being a former BKB champion and, you know, has the 7-0 record across two promotions, hasn't tasted that defeat quite yet and everything like that. But in terms of, like, I guess the X's and O's of what he does in the ring, like, I've heard in some interviews you've kind of credited the chin and things like that that he brings, but, like, stylistically, like, what do you think he really does well out there?
Hey, look, Lee does well off the lead hand. He's got a very good jab, you know, a very good accuracy with his jab. He'll double, triple his jab and his way in. He'll throw a good right hand, he'll work the body a little. And this is all, you know, basic boxing, you know, things that I've seen all my life. But he does it well. He plays a good distance. You know, those are his pros. You know, the pros is that he'll throw a lot of combinations. He'll throw, you know, instead of throwing ones to 1-2s, he'll throw 3-5s. You know, I thrive on that. So that's great for me, too. He throws 3-4-5, 4-5-6 amount of punches when he strikes. He'll lead in with his jab, double jab, or even a triple jab. But just like he has those pros, and the other pro would be, you know, his chin. He can take a hit. You know, arguably, he can take a hit, you know, from the people we've seen hit. The biggest hitter that we've seen him face is Bobby Taylor. And Bobby Taylor pushes his punches. So there's a big difference in between a snap in the punch and a push, because you're strong and you're pushing through the punches, you know what I mean? Bobby Taylor is one of those pushing punch guys, you know what I mean? Like, very muscular person, pushes with his weight, you know? There's more danger in the snapping punch, you know, that pull back of the punch, and I assess that, you know? And that becomes even more dangerous when you're the faster man. I'm the faster man. I am definitely faster than you, you know? The other thing is, you'll have those pros, but the cons are the fact that his defense has holes all over. He gets hit a lot. You know, he drops his hands a lot when he's throwing a lot of punches. So if he hasn't adjusted that, and even if he has done some adjustments, once that card starts going down, those mistakes will come back out. And I'm going to capitalize on those. You know what I mean? So he has the pros, but I think he has more cons than pros.
Yeah, it seems like from what you're saying, like the difference that you bring to the table as compared to some previous opponents is like your ability to kind of like maintain that strong base. Like you talk about the differences between like thoughtfully like pushing out your punches or flicking out the punches as opposed to like that, you know, physical, you know, follow through and stuff like that. So it seems like the, I guess, maintenance of that base and just the, you know, footwork and stuff like that is probably some of the biggest differences between what you bring to the table versus maybe what some previous opponents have done.
Yes, 1,000%, man. It's going to be hard for him to find people or for him to have found people that was following him that are anything near like what I do. You know, like, nobody that signed to BKFC has the footwork that I have. Nobody. That nobody has demonstrated the footwork that I have, the defense, the ability not to get cut, you know, the power and speed that I possess is like that. The whole thing as a group, you know, you might find some people that have some power, yes, they have the Lorenzo Hunt with the power, yes, fast speed, yes, you know, but it's very hard to find all of this in one. Like, as for Libby, right? Libby has some very nice combinations, he throws some nice combos, got pretty good speed in his hands, combinates very well, and he can take a hit. But he's wide open to receive hits. He doesn't move his legs. You know, yeah, it's going to be very hard to find somebody to imitate me and be ready for what I'm going to bring. You know, something else.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a lot of different reasons as to why you've held that title for well over 1,000 days now, I guess.
Yes, sir.
I was going to say, what was it like kind of seeing that pop up on social media? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, you've been champion for years at this juncture now, but that specific number, like, did that kind of impart a certain feeling, or was it just kind of like, oh, yeah, that sort of makes sense?
Yeah, it was cool, actually. I never thought about it either. Like, that was 100 something days, I think it was. Yeah, 3 years and a half holding the title. Man, maybe, you
Yeah, and I don't know how much this reference will mean to you, if anything at all, but I saw a couple people commenting on that post saying it was kind of similar to, like, Roman Reigns, because there's, like, a WWE character who, like, his big thing is, like, oh, I've held the title for over 1,000 days now, and I'm like, yeah, Luis is out here doing it for real.
Yeah, I was wondering who the hell was Roman Reigns. I was reading some of his comments. I'm like, who the hell is Roman Reigns?
No, that's funny, though, man. I definitely, you know, can appreciate all of that for sure. But, yeah, I mean, very intriguing fight in a lot of different regards. Like, the last time we were talking, though, it seemed like you were talking about, like, with the Tom Show fight, how you were looking to kind of, you know, make a highlight out of it. Is there a certain, I guess, particular outcome you're looking for in this one, or a particular statement you're looking to convey with this fight?
Oh, man, we took Show down 3 times, man. That dude is tough. You know, he wouldn't just get up, he'll get up with a smile on his face. You know, you're meant for bare knuckle boxing when you're like getting knocked out of your ass and you're getting up with a smile on your face, man. It's like, what the fuck? You know, but compared to that, man, Lili, we have to turn off the lights on Lifestyle Lili. You know, there's only one Lifestyle that's Chris Lifestyle Lili. You know what I mean? So, yeah, he's going to be retaking that name because we're going to turn off the lights on Lili. 1,000%. We have to make it memorable. We have to make it, you know, so that everybody remembers, hey, I'm the pound for pound. You know, I'm dangerous in any change form that you can see. You know what I mean? I choose to box in some fights. I choose to go more rounds in fights and to give the fans, you know, the future, you know, a glance at the future of bare knuckle boxing, because we have a lot of fans out there, you know, where it's like, yeah, the blue loving fans, like the instinct, right? The kid, the instinct, you know, the Royce Hunt fights fans, they wanted to see blood knockouts, which is great, and I want it for that. But then you have the fans that appreciate, you know, the boxing, the scale, you know what I mean? And bare knuckle boxing, man, I'm telling you, bare knuckle boxing is going to be, I still do believe it'll be even bigger than UFC for the simple reason that it's simpler and easier to understand for the masses. You know, there's no grappling here, no picking, no, you know, it's a clinch, punch, cut, go to sleep. But when you put the science behind it, right, they say that boxing is a thinking man's sport, right? So when you put the science behind the bare knuckle boxing, when you put, you know, some brains in there and not just go for your primal instincts, but you can mix both, it turns into a beautiful thing to watch, man. You know, you have to be a lot more, you know, you have to calculate things better, you have to take better risks, you know, to be able to keep it exciting. I mean, you don't have to try to keep it exciting. It's always going to be exciting. So in 2 rounds, then there's no gloves. But to keep it, like, you know, that next level, you know, when you're actually thinking in there, you're not just brawling, you know, it's, man, I think that's, you know, I'm showing what the future of that is. It's not many of them. You know, I think I've seen one, I've seen, what's his name, the Marine's looking great. He looks like a paranormal boxer, you know. But there's a few of us, you know, I don't want to start naming things and naming people out, but there's a few of us, but very little, that are coming out that there's a science mixed with that animal instinct. And that's going to be the beauty of the growth of paranormal, you know, moving in the future.
Yeah, and very well articulated. I was kind of in a similar position where I didn't want to necessarily start naming people off because you don't want to leave anyone out. But I feel like you very much have very, like, at the very least played a part in kind of creating that, I guess, dialogue around fight IQ in this sport and stuff like that. And I feel like that really, I guess, serves that growth that you're talking about, like talking about how much more it can still serve to grow. So I feel like that understanding of the fight IQ is a key part in all of that. I would think that would be something you also take a level of pride in as you continue to make these great moments.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you love to see it for sure. And I mean, we were talking just a bit ago about how, you know, the last fight or relative, like the last opponent, I guess, that you were trying to get was supposed to be more so at welterweight. Like, is the next one going to be, you know, at welterweight? Because there's been some discourse about like what's happening with the welterweight title and stuff like that. And I'm kind of curious because obviously you love to see you compete regardless of the weight category. But do you think the next one is going to be you defending that welterweight title, or is it just a matter of whatever like potential offer might come your way? Because I feel like you've cleaned out lightweight mostly.
Yeah, you know, I've been asking for that for the welterweight defense for a while, you know, but I'll tell you the truth, man, I'll be very honest with you. As far as defending 165, if there's not a name like Eddie Alvarez, you know, let's say they were to sign somebody like Anthony Perez, you know, like, you know, somebody that, that's grown up, you know, like Oscar Trout. If there's not a name like that, I really don't care about it. You know what I mean? At this point, I'm going to prove once again that I'm about to come and that I deserve a little investment. I deserve that you know, we get the people that are actually going to face me. And we can fight on every weight class that they want. I'm open for super fights. I've called out Mike Perry a couple times at 170 for a super fight, you know, because I couldn't get any money in my weight class to fight. I mean, I only moved up to 165 to look for more money, to look for bigger names, you know? I called out the allows, you know, and that fight didn't happen. It was being talked about. And then here comes, you know, Mike Perry's manager, which is also Dan Wilde's manager, and brought me out of the conversation, put two of his own guys to fight each other. You know, my friend Yuri Monster and Dan Wilde. So it's like, I'm willing even to go higher, you know, even though I'm not a big person, you know what I mean? Just to look for a big check with a big name next to me, right? But more than the titles at this point, after I defend this one, good luck defending a title more than six times in a row, you know what I mean? I would keep defending 55. I'm not greedy. The only reason why I moved up was for that reason, for to make more money and to get a bigger name. But if a big name doesn't come, I will not take the risk. Because it's a risk. Every fighting man knows a risk. There's no gloves here, man. I mean, I'm not Superman. I'm just doing my job the right way. I'm doing my job well done. You know what I mean? But I'm not Superman, and I'm very realistic with myself. I'm a small 155 to begin with. So I'm a real small 165, you know? But if a name like Austin Trout, Eddie Alvarez, Anthony Pettis, they were just like, you know, like, then if that pops up, hey, just do it. You know, other than that, we can carry us. So very honest. Very honest.
Yeah, I mean, that's very fair. Definitely underscores how impressive it was that you even won that 165 title in the first place. I'm just hoping we get you some sort of big-name opponent and get BKFC Peru set up.
Yeah, we're ready to go, man. We're ready. That'd be great.
Yeah, that would be huge. I'd have to figure out how to get some travel arrangement over there. I feel like that could be a really fun event to cover. But yeah, we're talking about this event now, BKFC 45, a great show and another great fight and what's been quite the, you know, prolific lightweight championship run you've had. But I want to be considerate of your time and schedule, as I was kind of saying before. I'm sure there's a ton of questions I could ask you, but want to be mindful of your schedule, Luis. So is there maybe like a final parting thought you'd want to add as we're wrapping up, man?
Oh, man, just to wrap it up, always looking for sponsors, man. If you want to support the biggest, you know, the best, number one and only Alpha Pound of the entire organization, Luis Babu Palomino. Contact him on social media at Luis Babu on Instagram. You can talk to me directly, or you can pass it with my manager, but I'm definitely looking more sponsors, man. Other than that, thank you to all the ones that have supported me. Thank you for having me. And do not miss June 23rd. It's going to be a nasty show of putting the lights out by James Slatter and James Lindy.
Yeah, it's going to be a great fight and very much excited for BKFC 45 on June the 23rd there. And I was excited for this James Lilly fight before talking to you, but definitely compounded more after getting some insights from you, man. So thanks for that. And just, like I said, looking forward to peeping the fight when it goes down. But until then, you have a good rest of your day there, Luis.
Good work. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, on this episode of Bouts Talking Bouts, excited to be talking to an individual set to compete at BKFC 45. And in the headliner, no less, which transpires on June the 23rd. It's a very intriguing fight with the BKFC lightweight championship on the line as Luis Palomino defends that crown. And is readying to knuckle up and toe the line against number one contender James Lilly. And great having James on the show today. How's your day going there, man?
Very hot at the moment. Super hot. We're not used to this type of weather in the UK. So I've got to get the fans out for the family. But otherwise, all good. Had some media stuff to do today, but yeah, it's all going good. Hope you're well.
Yeah, no, definitely doing well. I mean, I'm doing what I enjoy, getting to talk to, you know, top quality fighters and everything like that. And I guess to that point, with you being ranked number one in the division, like I was saying from the top, I imagine maybe it wasn't that much of a surprise that this was your next fight, but what was the, I guess, initial onset feelings when this bout offer first came your way?
Oh, it was a yes straight away. You know, there was no hesitation. When we got the text message, I kind of had a feeling that the fight was going to happen a couple of weeks earlier because he was meant to be fighting Austin Trout, and that fight fell through for whatever reason. So I kind of had an inkling, so I started picking up my training. But yes, it's a dream come true. You know, I've said it on like a few interviews I've done this week. I couldn't have asked for a better fight. It's not just that he's a champion of my division. He's the champion of the division above. He's the number one pound in the world. And I want to fight the best guys possible. So that, you know, it's all come together. I'm super happy, super stoked for it. Really excited.
Yeah, and what I love about this is it seems like the culmination of, you know, 20 plus years in general. Like, you were talking about that in a recent social media post, just how you've been chasing really like a combat sports dream overall, and I mean demonstrably effective in bare knuckle and everything like that, just readying for your 10th fight. And it seems like you're kind of taken aback almost by guys like Chris Lytle saying that you're right up there with the most complete fighters in BKFC. So can you talk about just how satisfying this journey has been, just like how many years have been put into it, like I said, and what it's, you know, culminated into now fighting the number one pound for pound in BKFC?
Yeah, it's really hard to like describe, you know, the last sort of 14-15 months since I've been with BKFC. My career has just gone to another level. Like you said, you know, I remember watching Chris Lytle in UFC when, you know, I first got into it, and, you know, he was legendary. It's really, like I said, I've said that before, if I finish my career now, I'd be really satisfied with what I've done. And BKFC have just taken me on this whole other sort of plane where the ceiling just, I don't know where the ceiling is at the moment. It just seems to be. And I just can't wait to see where it goes. And I know I'm super happy. They asked me on the BKFC podcast earlier if I'd like to rant about anything, and I said I'm so happy at the moment. I'm living the dream. There's nothing that's bothering me at the moment. You know, it's the life I've always wanted to live.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, so much leading into this. I mean, you obviously have been a champion previously in the sport, garnering that BKB championship when you finished Scott McHugh. But like, what would, you know, winning a title within BKFC mean to the overall legacy? It would seemingly bolster the resume in a big way, obviously. But, you know, fighting somebody, like we've been saying, number one, pound for pound. So, I mean, like, how much does a BKFC title hold importance to you, like, with the context of you previously being that BKB champion?
For me, the goal wasn't, I didn't set out to become like world champion or BKFC champion. My goal was to get over stateside and fight in America, and I kind of take everything as a bonus. But as the ceiling got higher, as I sort of got into the rankings and then beat this guy and beat that guy, I kind of got it in my sights that that's something that I wanted. You know, when I first started out doing sort of bare knuckle and came over to BKFC, I never was like, right, I want to be world champion. I was just like, right, let's just see where this journey takes me. And it's only when, you know, I've had like this consistency, I've had this good support team around me that we're like, right, well, where can we go with this? And Lewis Powell
Salamino, you know, was always going to be that guy, you know. I'll be honest, if he'd vacated or I was fighting someone else for an interim title, I'd kind of be a little bit more disappointed, because he's got this, you know, the pound-for-pound status. He's a two-weight champion. So the belt is really icing on the cake, you know, actually getting to fight who many consider the best bare-knuckle fighter on the planet is, you know, more of a, you know, the achievement, and I'm just happy that it can come with a title, you know?
Yeah, and that focus seems to have been like a linear kind of thread through like a few interviews I've seen of yours. Like, you're obviously giving credence to each opponent in these different, you know, increments in your career. But at the same time, it would seem like Palomino was always the guy you were kind of like looking towards from some of the interviews I'm seeing.
Yeah, it's, you know, if like, for example, Anna Belcher was the number one pound for pound, then I wouldn't go for that as much, because he's a much heavier fighter than me. But because it just so happens that the champion of my division is also considered the number one pound for pound in the whole organization, then that's the fight I want. You know, I want to show the world what I'm all about. And, you know, I love fighting. You know, if I was at the bottom of the pile, I'd still fight for as long as my body let me. But it just so happens that if you're good at something, and you're consistent, you get the rankings and you get more plaudits. So they kind of go hand in hand. And yeah, as I said, I'm just loving the fact that the best guy in the organization I'm fighting next week.
And it seems that you're getting in some great work ahead of this one. Obviously, someone like Dex Spellman is going to be able to impart a lot to you, I would think. But I was noticing you were working with Rico Franco as well. And I mean, on a skill set level, definitely makes sense, but also just the fact that both of you are preparing for different main event fights coming up. So can you speak to, you know, how important that work has been in this recent camp especially?
Yeah, I've known Rico for a long time, since we were both on the same UK circuit, and he helped me out with sparring for Bobby Taylor. I was up in Leeds, and I also want to say a big shout out to Andy Bakewell for, if I ever need sparring because I work away from home, he's always on the phone to find me a gym to go to. And, you know, me and Rico kept in contact, you know, over the years, and he came down to help me out with sparring. And, you know, Rico's another very experienced fighter, where he's had to change probably the way he fought in MMA and boxing to suit bare knuckle. And it's really hard getting experienced bare knuckle fighters around you to, because they spar different to MMA guys, to boxing guys, you know. There's a different type of sparring, so it's been sort of invaluable having him down, and it's been a great camp for sparring, to be fair.
And that kind of brings up an interesting question to me, because, like, certain times I've noticed with, like, you know, people preparing for the bare-knuckle fights, like, the sparring can sometimes consist of fighting with, like, the bigger, like, Queensbury rules kind of gloves. But I've also talked to some bare knuckle fighters who will use like the 4-ounce MMA gloves to kind of replicate the range more so. Like, what are you kind of utilizing in that regard?
Most of my sparring, we use the 16-ounce big gloves. You know, you've got protective tools, but I'm also part of an MMA gym, KGB, and I do quite a lot of sparring work with the amateur MMA gloves, the 6 ounces on, just, you know, because of the clinch work. And we've had some really good rounds up there with some, you know, ex-UFC guys and stuff. So, yeah, I do a mix. Most of it's with big gloves on, a lot of it. And then, you know, we mix in the 6 ounce gloves for when we're trying to simulate the clinch work.
And is the work more oriented to, like, your sparring partners kind of doing what they do best and bringing that to the table? Or is it more about curating the camp whereby your fighters that you're getting in that work with are replicating certain stylistic attributes that Palomino has?
To be honest, it's hard to find people to sort of replicate Lewis's style. I think he's got a very unique style where he, you know, he fights in sort of phases where he's like on you and then he backs off and he counters. And so it's really hard to replicate that style. So I've had a variety of opponents. I've had, you know, guys who are experienced MMA fighters, experienced professional boxers, experienced bare-knuckle fighters. So I just have a variety of different fighters, and that's the best I can prepare. So it's more about me getting sharp and changing, especially if you've got like three or four different boys there, and one of them's a brawler, one of them's a boxer, one of them likes to grab you, you know. It's nice to have that. So you've got multiple game plans depending on how the fight goes, because it's really hard to get someone. Bobby Taylor's a perfect example, actually. We thought he was going to rush me and, you know, come on me straight away. And as soon as the buzzer sounded, he took a step back and went on the back foot. So, you know, you can never predict what another man's going to do. You know, they've got certain styles and, you know, certain niches, but it's hard to actually, you know, predict what they're going to do in the night.
Yeah, I get what you're saying in that kind of sense. And you talk about, like, the unique aspects of Palomino's style. And as far as, like, it's hard to maybe find people to replicate that. Like, specifically, like, what does he bring to the table that makes his style so unique from what you've been able to tell? Like, what are some of his better attributes?
I think he's very good at managing the distance and the pace. I think a lot of the guys he's fought have fallen into his little traps. Like he likes, you come forward, then go on the back foot, and he draws people in. I've seen it against Martin Trey Brown and Tom Schoaf. You know, Tom Schoaf didn't utilize his height and reach advantage over. I mean, you let him come on him straight away. And I think, you know, I think he's going to be hard to work out in that sense. If he comes straight at me, great. If he goes on the back foot, great, we'll box him. We've got a few tricks up our sleeves for him as well. You know, it's a very hard fight to think how it's going to go. And I'm looking forward to the challenge.
And something I like about your, I guess, arc in BKFC, it seems like you're very cerebral as much as you're about the physical application of the technique. Like after the Bobby Taylor fight, I mean, scoring a TKO over the then number three ranked guy in the division, I think most people would be pretty happy about that. But I saw a quote where you were saying, like, I was like slightly above average, like a 6 out of 10. Like, I felt like I got in my own head about it. So how important is, I guess, that, you know, analytical component, like trying to assess the, I guess, mental end of things as you continue to improve the physical elements?
Yeah, I think, you know, most people can get themselves in a great shape, get themselves fit, and, you know, with pad work, spar, you can get yourself to pretty much the same peak. But I think with this style of fighting, it's sort of a thinking man's game. And like you said, I got in my own head a little bit, and I listened to, like, people talking about Bobby all week, how tough he was and how hard he hits. So I kind of think I had a point to prove. And that's why I wasn't happy with my performance. You know, I was holding my feet a little bit too much, going after him a bit too much. And I'm my own worst critic as well. You know, my corner men and my coaches have got to sometimes tell me not to be so hard on myself, because I come out of sparring and I'll think I've done, you know, rubbish or terrible. And they'll be like, no, you've done well. And if I see a take back,
I get what you're saying. I like how you called it a thinking man's game, though, and I feel like there's definitely a group of fighters that have really, I guess, elevated the discourse around the fight IQ that's ever growing in bare knuckle. That's partly why I think this fight is so compelling. Like, obviously, you guys have great physical tools, but I feel like both of you guys have the, I guess, experience, but also coupled with, like, that strong, you know, fight IQ and whatnot. So, I mean, this fight definitely looks like one of the better kind of like chess matches that could be made out there in the sport now.
Yeah, it's the thing with bare knuckle that not many people like understand is you can't simulate the fight. Like, you know, you can't have no gloves on and, you know, beat up in your sparring partner because you're going to get cuts and stuff. So I think experience is so important at bare knuckle that every time you take a fight, you add into your experience. So when you get people who are over like five or six fights, I'd always give them more of a chance against even, like, you know, big Xboxers or big ex-UFC stars, because I think the experience with bare knuckle, when you're working out where to put your hand to block and stuff, so important. And I think that's why this fight is, like you said, so intriguing, because we've had a similar amount of fights. We both know our way around it. I've had the experience now of going over to America twice to fight, different time zones, cutting weight over there. So it's all added to, you know, the game plans I've got, and I'm not ready for any surprises. You know, we had a hostile crowd in New Orleans. I got five rounds in the ring with Tyler. Done America twice with the time zone difference. So yeah, I think I've put myself in a good position to be the best in the world.
And definitely a couple more questions I have related to that fight, but I feel like I'd be remiss if I, you know, didn't touch on some of the, you know, hometown love you're getting here from what I can tell. Like, I saw the spray-painted image of you in Swansea and stuff like that, and it seems like you're getting in some different, like, poetry readings and stuff like that. Like, I think that's a cool part of what you're doing as well. Like, it seems like you've had, like, hundreds of different works published and stuff like that. So I guess it's a bit of a two-part kind of question. Like, I'm curious about how the, I guess, hometown support has been feeling, especially, like, some of the early days that you had previously talked about on social media, just, like, how you were struggling to sell tickets to your, like, earlier fights and stuff like that. But, yeah, can you also just talk about, like, some of the poetry end of things? Because I find that interesting.
Yeah, it's you know, that spray painting really took me back. Like in the UK, you see like stuff like that for like, you know, football players and local heroes, and just for someone to go down and do that off their own back, you know, I didn't expect it. Yeah, I'd be getting a lot of love, you know, a lot of backing from, you know, local businesses, local things, and yeah, it's incredible. You know, I just want to do my city proud. You know, it's nice being known all over the world, and, you know, having like an American fan base and stuff, but nothing beats having people in your city behind you, and everyone's so supportive. It's been great, and I just want to make sure that I can do the best job I can do and put Swansea firmly on the battle map.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess just one of the last questions I hear, just like I said before, trying to be mindful of your time and everything, but when I was talking to Luis the other day, he was very much crediting your experience and your, you know, past with BKB as a title holder, as I'd kind of mentioned, and he said your chin was very strong and everything, but it seemed like he was like looking at this fight where I guess his bigger attributes were, I guess, his boxing ability, speed, etc. And then he kind of like did a bit of name play with your nickname, saying he was going to turn the lights out on Lights Out. How do you see this fight going? Like, do you have a certain, I guess, predominant visualization of how, you know, the story of this one unfurls, I guess?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've got great respect for Luis. He's been a great champion, but, you know, all reigns have to come to an end. I think, boldly, I'm going to predict that I'm going to knock him out in the fifth round. I think I'm going to work him out early, and then I'm going to shock the world as he tires. I'm going to get him out of there, and I'm going to be the first Welshman to hold a BKFC belt. And then I'll look forward to, as an honourable man, giving the champ a rematch in my hometown.
Yeah, I mean, sounds like a great plan if that were to fall into the ideal outcome there for you, and very much was excited for this fight before talking to you, but definitely increasing that much more after getting some great insights from you, man. But like I keep saying, I want to be considerate of your time and schedule, so is there maybe any final parting thought you'd want to add as we're wrapping up here, man?
Obviously, thank you for coming and letting me come on. I just want to give a big shout out to, you know, everyone in Swansea and the wider world who are supporting me. I'm up against Luis. You know, we know how good of a champion he is. I think I'm in the most difficult fight to date. And I just said, I can't wait to get out there. You know, I'm excited. And I hope you guys can all tune in.
Yeah, and I think that excitement definitely shared by the people that avidly follow Bare Knuckle and very much excited for BKFC 45. Definitely counting down the days until June 23rd there when you and Luis Palomino get out there. But again, thanks for the time and great insights, man. And until then, you have a good rest of your day there, James.
Thank you very much, Matt. Thank you for having me on.